the wand, a puff of smoke, and the magic man pulls one out of the hat.
I still can't believe it happened.
Welcome to the Maroos Magic Supercoach podcast following round 14, the third of the bye rounds, one to go, what's meant to be the toughest, and I think it's going to be what it lived up to be. Tommy, to join us. How are you, Tommy?
Yeah, good, mate. I definitely reckon it's going to be the toughest, and I can't wait to see the back end of these bye rounds. Even though there was four, two of them were relatively easy. You sort of forget how much, I think, stress they sort of bring on. You know, when you've got your best 22 and it's just week after week slowly upgrading, it's easy and you make easy decisions. But there's a lot of complexities that come in the bye rounds. You do all this planning and it only takes one thing to stuff it all up. So looking forward to being done with, coming out and hopefully having a full squad of primos.
Well, yeah, that's the hope. And you're right. Normally 3 weeks, you'd always say view your bye rounds over the full 3 weeks, because 1 week you're going to have less premiums than others. But the way it worked this year with the two easy ones with two teams on the bye, then four teams on the bye, if you had extra players on that week, like I had scores of steals 85 dropped off the week before. I think I even had a 90, which dropped off my best 18. Like, I wanted to have more players there. Then this week, when you have less, all of a sudden you have to cop a few low 30s, which we saw. And that's, again, the benefit of having these extra numbers in the buys. And if you do plan well and get those extra numbers, you don't have to wear a Matty Johnson or Eddie Forward as well. How many of them did you wear and how did you finish up for the week?
I think I dropped off. Who was it? Sorry, just flipped back to ownership percentages. So I had 19 play, including Briggs on the bench. Would have been nice to get his score. Eddie Ford completely dropped off, but then, yeah, looking at a Johnson and a Fife and a Steele bringing home the tail end. Above that was obviously really good scores. A lot of primos went well. So I got a 2004, went up just a single seven spot, so 1,079, and I guess across the buys, I'm down about 80 or so ranks, even with all the planning and, you know, a lot of things going right. So hopefully I can get a bit of a jump this week where I should have 18. How'd you go?
A bit behind you. I was 1991. Similar low scores. All those names you mentioned I own. We'll obviously speak about Steele more in detail soon. I had the 19 playing, but I had seven forwards. So I could loop Fifey. Saw Fifey's 48 or whatever he ended up scoring and rolled out Eddie Ford, who was initially my F7, who then was a lower. So I should have been, 15, 20 points higher than that and had Johnson as my lowest score, not Ford, but is what it is. So that I would have dropped 62 rank points to get to 373. So still around the mark. I think I was 1,000 leading into it. This will be the big test, as you said. We'll talk more about how our teams are shaping up for it shortly. I'll be impressed if I can hold rank. I'm looking at the bare 18, and that includes a potentially a Marich or a few rookies too. So, but overall, it's been an okay buy period starting at 1,000, coming to 370 and one to go. Just quickly, you mentioned Briggs on the bench. Obviously, his score was known. Was there any temptation there for you? And I know a few coaches did do it once they saw Briggs' score to trade out a Timmy English, who had a pretty big break even, to someone like a Darcy Cameron, who is going to be a popular pick this week, and then get the Briggs score, bank that cash, and get the extra number this week?
There was definitely some temptation. I think if it was the other way around and it was Marshall who I'd be moving off, obviously the price difference wasn't too great. I think I probably might have pulled the trigger. I just think when I was looking at it and sort of bringing in Cameron, getting rid of Tim English, and then you're sort of running a Briggs and Marshall combo, I think the risk that, you know, Briggs leaves 15, 20 points a game potentially on the table over an English was too much of a risk. I think when we look at Briggs, he's sort of come in and he's averaging, 116 since he's come into the side. And that sort of places him at around a top three ruck. He's a very experienced ruck. He's relatively young. And do we think, you know, Briggs is Briggs is going to outscore, you know, a whole host of really experienced and quality rucks below him, like a Darcy when he comes back, you know, a Cameron, a Marshall, Witts, I don't think so. Like, these are really quality rucks, Riley O'Brien. Like, there's really quality players down there, and I don't know if Briggs is going to put himself up into the upper echelon of those players when we get to the end of the year, and that's kind of what you needed out of him if you made that move. So, for me, I thought it just carried a little bit too much risk, and the other thing is I had enough cash to fully upgrade my side. I think if doing that sort of move allowed you to get, you know, a Clary and a Neil to finish your teams over the next couple of weeks, it was probably, might have been a lot more worth it. Where for me, I could have done similar moves and similar upgrades whilst keeping a Timmy English. So a lot went against the decision for me, but I definitely think it had its role in certain people's teams.
Yeah, I think an unlimited trade format, I know a lot of people of our members have come from fantasy, and that's obviously a great play because you can bank the cash and you know you can then upgrade Briggs again in a few weeks' time and when the gap's going to even be smaller to English and then do that trade again. But limited trades, you're stuck with Briggs for the rest of the year. And as you said, you might gain a few points with that extra bit of cash. But if you're then giving up 10 points, which I think is even being conservative, there's every chance it could be 20 points to English the rest of the year. With still 12 weeks to go, there's still, was it 10 to go? Still plenty of the season to go. 200 points, it's going to hurt you late. And that's why when we talk about our trading targets, hopefully you've got the cash to do that. And if you don't, there are a few value options we'll speak about today. But you want to be getting players who you're going to hold the rest of the year, knowing that those teams around the top are going to get players or best 22 players. And if you're giving up a few points every week, like I was last year with a short and a crisp to a Sinclair and giving up 30 points per week, it really makes it hard to claw back. So what we'll do today, we'll firstly speak about those teams who have come off the bobs. We've spoken about those in detail up until now the last few weeks. So go back to the Trade Insights to see our thoughts on other players. We'll then touch on players who weren't off their buy, but whether we think more highly of them, stocks up, stocks down, and then some questions more so about who to trade out. Because the reason why this week was always going to be so tricky in terms of fielding 18 is that a lot of the players who are on their buy are players who you earmark to keep for the full year, whether it's a Rosie, Butters, Taranto, Cornelio, English himself, the midfielders of Bontempelli, backline if you're still running a Sheasel and a Zeeble. So there's a lot of players there who you might have to weigh up trading to get that 18. We'll talk about scenarios, whether it's worth doing trades of premiums just to get that extra number, or if you're better off copying a donut and then keeping those trades up the sleeve. So lots to chat about today, but firstly, teams coming off their bye. Adelaide, I think it's pretty clear that Dawson and Laird are going to be top echelon in their position. So if you don't own them, I think they're both great prime targets. It's Ben Keys, the interesting one. Obviously, comes in at value. What he's shown as a midfielder, which he did first half of last year, where he averaged 114 pre-buy on 80% centre bounces, shows he can be a top six forward. It's just a different role. Last year he was an attacking midfielder. Now they've got Dawson Laird in there, and he's been used more so as a run-with role. I know he tagged Dacos last time they played Collingwood. They've got him again this week, so that might mean he goes back to half-forward to play a defensive role. He was very cheap 2 weeks ago. Obviously, he had to wear that bye, which, as I said, I think for me it was better waiting that extra week. If you had have gone him last week, it meant you might have had to wear a Ford or a Johnson score, whereas if you didn't go him, it meant that you would have had an extra number and maybe skip those and gain 60-odd points. He's still pretty discounted, though, down 130K for the season, price at 418K, break-even of 20. Any temptation for a cash-starved team, or you'd rather go where it looks like there's a pretty clear top seven or eight guaranteed midfield minutes each week, whereas still Keys, we don't know if he's going to play that half-forward role, which he did the first half of the year, averaging 70, or be this midfield Keys?
For me, I think, and look, it's just a vibe and a gut feel in terms of what's going to happen to his role as the season progresses. I think it's likely that he's going to have times where he's going to go forward, he's going to do tagging roles. I think I sort of flagged that I thought he probably wouldn't be in the midfield because he wouldn't tag against West Coast. Well, he went into the midfield, he didn't do a run with role or at least a heavy one. He obviously had a really high score, but I do also think he probably will go to Dacos this week, and he scored 52 against them last time. I think for the cash star side, he's the best option in this price range, and there isn't a whole lot of good options in this price range. I think if you need a midfielder and you're down at, you know, probably two or less trades post fully upgrade, it would be one if you didn't get a Keys. I think that's the time that it would be an okay play. But I think the risk that he presents in bringing in and, you know, trudging along with a Liam Baker type scoring average for me last year, it's a season killer. Having that one player that's not going to put up big scores hurts too much. And I think he probably presents too much risk, especially if you... I think that the type of sides that he's attractive to are those that don't have many trades, which means you're not getting out of him. I think it's a desperation play, and it's one that I would be okay doing if I was in a really low trade situation, but I certainly wouldn't be happy with it because I think it presents too much risk. I don't really think that answers a whole lot of the question, but I think long story short, no for me.
Yeah, I promise you I wouldn't mention you getting Baker and that you're the one who brought that up this week. I'm with you. So what, he's played midfield four times this year. The first time to tag Dacos, where he got the 52, which Dacos moved in the midfield to try to shake that tag. But that worked. Adelaide should have won that game. So whatever strategy they did then, you think they'll deploy it again. So I'm with you. I think they'll tag Dacos, which might not mean playing much midfield. It might be half forward. As you know, Dacos goes everywhere. Then he tagged Lachie Neal and scored well himself. Then he tagged Matt Rowe, scored well himself. And the surprise to me and you was the fact he... still got, he started half four, but still got some midfield minutes versus West Coast and got on the end of a couple. The one thing, what they were, when they were flying early in the year, Adelaide, it was these young kids, Rochelle, Rankin, running through the midfield, Saligo. And I feel like Rochelle was just tiring, as he would a second-year player. And I think after the break, they're going to want to inject him back in the midfield because the stuff he was doing forward to centre was pretty brilliant for the Crows. And I think Keys has played a bit of a stopgap role there up until the bye. So I think he will play more midfield than he did the first half of the year, but not enough to be, when you look at the top six forwards, when it's a Tirano, a Dunkley, a Goulden, a Rosie, Canelio even, who we'll speak about in a bit as a potential trade-out, they're playing guaranteed 80% midfield minutes. And as we know in Supercoach, they're the ones who score the best. So agree. You said you didn't answer the question. I think you did. If you have the cash, then you're not going it. You're only going it if you're lacking trades and lacking cash, then it's... because there's a chance if he does stay midfield, he's going to outscore Canelio at much cheaper price and you're going to look like a genius, but it could be a season killer. Unlike fantasy, where you've got those luxury trades at the end of the year, do the switching off week to week, you're stuck with him for the year, and I don't want to be stuck with a Ben Keys. Those coming off the bye at the Pies, Dacos obviously has shown his... an absolute stud at Supercoach. He's actually, because he had a bit of a quiet patch, he's priced pretty well for his output. So if you are one of those few coaches who have had to sit through his start to the season, I think it's time you can still jump on now. It's not like sometimes a popular player you might not want to jump on to try to get a bit of a pod, but it's hard to see Dacos, the way they feed him, the way he uses the ball, not being a top echelon player. But the one of more interest at the Pies is Darcy Cameron. Obviously came into the season discounted after playing the first half last year as a forward, even was sub for one of those games and finished strong as a ruck. He's started the season really well this year before getting injured, came back from injury slowly, worked his way back. I think he had 65% game time the first game back, 70, then 72, and then was let go against in the Queen's Birthday game and scored really well considering he was up against the Gawn-Grundy matchup. I think he had 14 hitouts and still scored really well. I'm a big fan of him, particularly his flexibility for me, knowing that lack of trades and didn't get a brig, so I'm running with a loophole R3. By getting a Cameron in the forward line, it means if anything does happen to English and Marshall, and particularly English, who's yet to play a full season, he always seems to have some niggles the back half of the year, I can just do a nice little switch there and have the cover. So for that reason, he bumps right up above anyone for me for targets this week, because that coverage is going to be vital. Plus, I think the way he looks to be a scorer, he could be a top six forward. Your thoughts on Cameron?
Yeah, I think he's the number one traded in player this round across the competition, and that's for a really good reason. He presents a fair bit of value at his price. He comes with great flexibility, forward and ruck, where we don't really have other players that present the same type of scoring. I think he probably falls... I think it's likely that he probably falls outside the top six range in the forward line, but that flexibility that he gives us to cover for English or a Marshall, where, you know, if they both play the 23 this year, we'll both be very surprised. It'd be really nice if they do, but I think the odds are that probably one of them is going to miss at some point, because they always have in every other year. So for me, I think he's a really good option. He comes in with a fair bit of value and he looks ripe for the picking. He's obviously come back into form and out here. Played well in a tough matchup on the weekend. I think one thing to flag is he's got a really tough run of rucks coming up with Riley O'Brien, with English, and then Sean Darcy. So not the easiest next four games, but he does his best work around the ground. I think he's going to get enough hit outs to keep that floor relatively low. And, he does his work around the ground. So I think he's good for a 95 to 100, which I'm happy to buy in at that price with that flexibility.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you. The matchup is daunting to come, but as you said, he does a lot around the ground and he's rucking more now than he ever has before. Even last year, the back end, when he looked to be a great pick for Supercoach, he's only rucking 50% of the time. Now it's close to that 70% mark. And so far this year, he's had those low time on ground games. He's had the game he got subbed out and he's still averaging 95 and a half. So actually, despite those tough matchups to come, it doesn't really stop after that. Lysett's starting to be pretty restrictive after him. Then they've got the Carlton, they've got Hawthorn with Reeves. So he's got some tough matchups, but I'd be surprised if that 95 isn't his floor from here, and we might see higher than that. And as any Canelio owners or even a Goulden, at times you'd take a 95 from them. And even a Ben Keyes, if you're toying with him, you'd be pretty happy to know if 95 is his floor. So the fact that flexibility is added on top, I'm bringing him, and I've even got the six forwards already. I don't believe you've completed. You've been sitting here waiting for a Cameron. So I've got the six forwards, but I'm just going to play a forward in my midfield for now, especially like, well, Dunkley and even Taranto are the scoring in line with those top eight midfielders anyway, and the bottom six forwards aren't too far away from the bottom eight mid. So I'm getting him and having that extra forward again for flexibility. If there were to be an injury in the ruck, I'll be able to flick him in the ruck. I'll flick my Dunkley in the midfield, flick him back forward, and then play an okay rookie. Or okay, we'll speak at five in a minute in the midfield. So that's my plan, and I'm all over that. In terms of other players off the bye, Essendon have a few. Merritt, who's now pretty pricey after his run he's been on, and question marks whether, showing how good he is he going to catch some attention? What's Parrish going to do when he comes back in there? I know he got pushed forward against Carlton and looked pretty good there as well, so they want to add that flexibility in there as well. So while I still have Merritt as a top eight mid, I'd be hesitant buying into him at this price now post-buy. You're the Essendon man. What do you think?
Yeah, attention's definitely going to come. Port have shown their tag. They play them in round 16, and then Adelaide Keys, that's the perfect job for him in round 17. So I don't think I'd be buying into him. He's pretty topped up in terms of that price. And I think like he'll be close enough to the top eight, but it's going to be across the season. I think there's probably better options this week that present a little bit more value.
Yeah, and it's funny, this time last year we were wanting the coaches, when we all say, oh, if you're strapped for cash or strapped for trades, it doesn't mean that you're going to have to take a haircut the rest of the year. I've shown you the splits, first half, second half. Every year there's a swing and you'll get some second half stars. And this time last year, those coaches with trades and cash, which wasn't me, were getting a Parrish, and I don't think it was you either, Tommy. And those who were desperate settled for a Merritt, and then Merritt ended up outscoring Parrish by 20-odd points. There's also Parrish, who's actually cheaper now, and we've seen his potential, but I wouldn't be buying into him first up because who knows what role he's going to play. The fact that the Bombers have looked really good with a couple of young, hard workers in Caldwell and Hobbs running through there with a Merritt, do they ease him in through the forward line? He's got body issues as well. So he's one to watch, but I wouldn't be bringing him in just yet. And then there's the two defenders, Ridley Redmond, who really caught some form leading into the bye. Something about it, I don't know. They obviously play better, both of them, when the Bombers are playing well, and it helps that they've got a healthy back line in Laverde and Zerk Thatcher, meaning those two can run off and do what we thought they'd do all season. There's just a bit of an asterisk with those, and maybe it's me. I'm hesitant being a Ridley owner, not knowing how long it's going to last for, but I know Freco put up a number since round six. I think Ridley and Redmond have been the top four defenders, but I'm hesitant jumping into those this week. Not sure your thoughts, Tommy.
I think Ridley presents the value option in terms of cash-starved coaches. I think I wouldn't be too upset getting into him, even pre that concussion. He wasn't doing horrible. I think, what's he priced at? So 504. Like in terms of what you're getting out of him, the last four rounds, he's gone over 100. And prior, he wasn't great, but in terms of his average, it was just below 90, which isn't horrible. I think you can do a lot worse than buying into Ridley with some upside. But he's not someone I'd be stoked to get, but I do also think he's probably the best option at around that price in the back line. When it comes to Redmond, I think there's just too much inconsistency. If you don't have a Sinclair, he's obviously a better option. He's kind of like Sinclair, but he doesn't get as many cheap kicks and is a bit more responsible defensively. So that just screams that Sinclair's a better option. So not for me on Redmond. I think he's going to be just too up and down.
Yeah, speaking of it, so I know lots of players have this because obviously Supercoach scoring is weighted towards score involvements and assists and efficiency, but his average this year in wins is 106 and average in losses is 80. And last year, Redmond's average in, I haven't got them on my stat sheet, I wrote it down though, 127 in wins and 76 or something in losses. So it's no coincidence. Yeah. That shows how important he is to the Dons, but that you can't take those up and downs. On Ridley, you did mention, so I've watched him pretty closely as an owner, non-owner, owner. And while he was scoring fine, because he does take kick-ins, he goes, it's great to watch when you're not watching the game. You just see the stats. You click on his name and you see he's going at 100% efficiency. He kicks it beautifully. And he's spoiled. So he's always going to have a decent enough floor. It just, he didn't look like he wanted to get involved in passages of play. And it's funny, that concussion almost woke him up. That post that, he's now, you'd see him with his arms out calling for the footy, which he wasn't doing before. So, yeah, I'm with you. I don't mind him out of the two of them. Hawthorne, there's not really anyone relevant you'll be bringing in, I wouldn't have thought, who potentially could be top of their line. I know Dylan Moore back in the last year showed that, but he's yet to have that midfield role with those young mids. I don't think that's going to happen. Melbourne are the ones, though, who have two of the top couple midfielders in the game. Oliver, fresh off a few weeks off, he's now going to be super unique. He started off, I think he was owned by something like 90% of the top 1,000. Right now he is, where are we? Oliver, he is 10% of the top, or one of the top 100, 9% of the top 1,000. So coaches have jumped off, obviously, post that injury. He's now super unique and likely to be the best scoring player in the game. It is very expensive, though, so you're going to have a lot of cash to get up to there. Will you have any hesitation going first up, knowing he's missed a few weeks of footy?
A little bit of hesitation, but I don't like any of my other options. I guess the other Melbourne player in Petrarca is probably the other one for me that I'm looking at. In terms of cash, I'm not restricted at all. I have two midfield spots left to fill, and I'm including Steele in one of those players. And I can get to Clary or Petrarca. They're obviously very similarly priced. I think personally the consistency and the value that Oliver presents, the fact he's coming off injury makes me nervous, but at the same time that hamstring, he was right to go, I think, before he got that the infection on the blister on the foot, which is probably just unlucky more than anything. And I know there's a little bit of concern on Twitter today around his hand, I think. But I think people might be jumping at shadows on that one. He's historically the most durable player in the comp or one or two. So I think for me, I'm not too concerned. And even if he's going to drop in price and maybe put up 100 or 110 this week, which is, you know, not what you want at that price, and he's going to drop, if it's your last upgrade and you don't need the cash, I think he's fine to get in on, and that's the situation I'm in.
Yeah, I reckon he's going to be fine. He played out that game. He did the hamstring. He was running the next week. He would have wanted to play the next week, got told to wait one more, and then the infection came. I think he's going to be, especially looking at coaches and their trades left, he's going to be unique on the way home. And as you said, he might go down in value, but it's not like round two or three where you get him, he's going to go down in value and everyone else jumps on at a bargain price. In 4 weeks' time, most coaches are going to only be holding on trades for injuries, two, three, four trades max, I imagine. They won't have the luxury to be able to go up to an Oliver. So if you've got the chance to get it, I don't mind going early. I know in the fantasy podcast, obviously there was unlimited trades, I said you might as well wait 1 week. He's going to drop a little bit in cash, see how he looks, and then jump on. But yeah, super coach, I'm all for jumping on if you have that luxury. And we'll speak more about Steele soon, but that makes sense how you've got the luxury to get up to an Oliver. In the midfield, West Coast, no one really relevant there. I know Elliot Yeo was putting up some decent numbers towards the bye round, but it's hard to trust West Coast and his body. Where is he going to play? I know he played half a game playing on Tex Walker as a defender to finish before that Adelaide game. Is he going to play midfield? Is he going to play? Who knows? So very cheap. I note that. It's a no for me. Your thoughts?
I think if you've got a lot of trades, you could probably look at him. I think his role's probably a little bit more short up. I think I was listening, I can't remember the name of the podcast. It's the West Coast one that they do 2 minutes on every game that Zabe's on. You'll know the name of that. Two-minute warning. Hardball gets. Yeah, I was listening to that today, and they were saying that like four or five premiership defenders are coming back, which probably shores up his role a little bit. I think it was like Hearn, Duggan, I'm not going to remember their names, but all of them were coming back, which probably shores up his role a little bit. I think it's the injury risk on Elliot Yeo, which means you've got to have the trades to be able to flick him out again at some stage. So I think if you're flush, I have seen that there's some coaches around that have still got 9 and 10 sitting there. I think if you're in that situation, you could probably take the risk and jump on a Yeo for a few rounds. But I think in most coaches' boat, he's probably a no.
Yeah, I didn't realise how cheap he was, less than 400K. So we mentioned before, he's a proud player, would have hated the criticism and not getting on the park. So as long as he's healthy and on the park, he's going to be playing with a bit of a chip on his shoulder and wanting to perform. We saw what he did. I think he almost had 30 touches against Adelaide. And as I said, half of that was playing fullback on Tex. It'd be hard to do, as you said, lots of trades or really low on cash, or if you can somehow swing your D7 to him. So you got the extra number this week, and then you can play a bit of looping with an Elliot Yeo at that price. Because to be honest, I'll probably like him more than a Ben Keys, and he is cheaper than that. So yeah, I'm not doing it though, so it's up to you.
I'm not sure. Is it round, when's the DPP coming? Is that round 16?
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's two more.
Is it? No, it goes 12, 6, 12, 18, round 18.
Oh, 18. So they're still 4 weeks away from DPP, but he will get that midfield DPP, you would assume at this point, given his CBA numbers. So he likely will come a D7, M9 swing, I suppose, on the back end if you're still holding on to a comfortable as well. So I guess that makes him a little bit more valuable in some aspects too.
All right, so those are the players who have come off the buy. Most of the names, if you look at the most trade-in players, it's by no coincidence why they're them, but pretty clear that we're pretty keen on Darcy Cameron and then Oliver if you've got the cash, and if you're strapped, then it's the Keys Yeo, and I'm probably Yeo slightly ahead of Keys. In terms of players who aren't off their buy but have gone up in my books, I thought, if it didn't rain on the weekend, I think Sinclair was on track for another big 120+. Every time I put those CBA trends on every week after the round, and every time you see CBA's down for Sinclair, it's when he scores well, when he plays half-back flank. He sort of roams and does what he wants, and he was doing that up until the rain, and then obviously the role still stays. It's just harder to play an intercepting running defender when it's raining like it was. So I'm just trying to work out how I can't go 2 years in a row on the back end of the year not owning a Sinclair, but I'm pretty certain now he's going to be a top six, where there was a few weeks ago where Nathan Wanganeen Malira and was doing the distributing. He was playing a bit midfield, bit not, and bit sort of we weren't certain he's going to be a top six. I'm back confident he's going to be a top six. Winhager looked great. He led the CBAs for the Saints on the weekend, and he's always quite cheap, but we're at that point in the year where he's not going to make you the cash you need, and sometime, or I think you're better off getting that cheaper rookie to then get the better upgrade, because you're only getting him probably to be on field for 1 week, and that's this week. Is he in any of your trade plans, Tommy?
He's not in mine. I think if you've got playing rookies, I like the idea of going down to the absolute basement and extracting as much cash as possible, which obviously Wynn Hager isn't. As a playing option, he's probably the best one that's available at that price. But his role, he was obviously tagging Bolton, which exposed him to the footy and to the CBAs. Does he tag every week? The other weeks he's come in, he hasn't necessarily done a hard job. So the role isn't going to be super consistent. So like I think he's fine to jump on as a cash gen, sort of bench player. But I think he's too expensive for most coaches who are low on trades at this time of year.
Yeah, so it was him and... So there were options last week in terms of the rookies, but they weren't the cheap ones. So all of Sheldrick, Devrob and Wynhager all performed well, and coaches who did make that move, yeah, they might have had to take a haircut on cash the other end, but they got a good score and then got another player this week, so they were looking pretty good. Devrob looked really good to the eye. He scored 95, but he didn't get the midfield. I think he had 10% centre bounces. He played more that high forward role. And pushed up to the wing at times. I think he's going to score well as well, but it wasn't like that 95 came from them saying, okay, get in the midfield where you've been in the reserves and getting your 35 touches each week. So both Wynhager and Robertson, I think if it was round 3 or 4 and you could have them on field for those weeks, get those extra points, plus get their cash gen, trade them out in a few weeks and make an upgrade, then I'd be really keen on both of them. Now it's at the point in year where cash is going to be king and you're going to want as much cash as you can for those upgrades, and you're not going to have them on field for those points. The traction reduces for me, so I'm not going to get either of them as it stands. Lukey Parker just looked great himself. A reminder how good he is at this game. He's a forwarder status last year, which probably rules him out this year. He's just mid only, but there's a chance he could perform in line with those top eight. In terms of stocks down, though, because these are coaches looking to potentially trade out, and you've mentioned him a few times here, Jack Steele, who was back-to-back absolute shockers, or 3 in a row now, absolute shockers. Dealt with a collarbone early in the year. We jumped on after that when we thought, okay, he's discounted. He then did that knee and then hobbled through that since. He certainly hobbled. I made mention of this on this podcast, that even to toss the coin against after the bye, where I thought he's going to come back fresh against the Swans, he was hobbling to toss the coin. I thought, gee, we're in trouble here, but watching him close, he actually was running fine. He just was nowhere near it. Fumbled, missed tackles, gave away some free kicks. Obviously not the Jack Steele we remember. It's funny, it just seemed that you're opting to trade when coaches are trying to find an extra number for this week. For that reason, I'm holding. But your reasons for trading, Tommy?
Just not good at the moment. Like, it sucks because, like, I brought him in round 8. So I went pretty early on him coming in. He'd just come off a 126. He went 95, 84, 135. And I thought, yep, he's about to work into the season. And he's just, 62, 85, 52. And the last 2 weeks, he's looked real bad. And it's not Jack Steele. The game hasn't gone past him. He's clearly carrying something pretty heavy, and he's as tough as they come. I think we've seen last year when he did his shoulder and he played the whole last quarter and he had another 6 tackles or something. Like, he's as hard as they come. If he was able to get himself up and play some really good passages of footy, he would be. And I think we've seen in the second half last week that, when he puts his mind to it, he can do well, and it's the body that's letting him down. So I'll probably definitely be buying into him next year, but I, with the information that we have around his body, is it knee, shoulder or Achilles? It's got to be something or a combination of all three. I just don't, when's he going to come good? He probably will, and I suppose if I wasn't in the position to have that cash gen sitting there with a Kieran, a Briggsy, I'd probably have to hold, but I just think I have to get off him. And you sort of look at his scores against Brisbane last couple of years, not this year or last year included, 149, 167. He's got 150s and 143s in the other teams. Like, he's as good as they come as a player when he's fit, but he's not fit. So yeah, he has to go for me because I can get rid of him.
Yeah, and this is a midfield spot where if you can get him up to a Clary Oliver, who you hope to get 125 each week, even 130, and if you've got someone who's showing he can put up 50s back-to-back, it's a lot of points you're giving up. My view is that I'm prepared to give him one more purely for that extra number this week. I know by trading him to someone who's playing this week, like Oliver, you've got the same amount of numbers playing, and I do have a trade up my sleeve. I just haven't got that cash or trades available to get him up to someone of note at his price point. So I'll give him one more at the least and then assess whether I think it's worth upgrading him next week when it gets to 22 on field and the normal weeks and knowing how many points I could be giving away, or do I use a trade for him. But yeah, I'm holding. I've got a little bit of faith. As I said, watching him closely, I thought he spread a lot better. He was running much better. He just was off. And I think it was more, yes, body, but I feel like part of it's his confidence, his form. As I said, the wet didn't help. You'd think it would help, but as soon as it started raining, Taranto took over. You'd think Jack Steele would have taken over with tackling and knocking the ball forward and getting clearances, but he was just fumbly and missing tackles. So I've got, it could be false hope that he's going to turn it around this week. Nat Fyfe, I've got to apologise there. I was very bullish on him on this podcast last week, that I thought watching him closely versus Richmond, that how good he was in the contest, that they'll watch those tapes and wish they didn't take him out of it in the middle of the last quarter when Tigers got back on top. And I thought we're going to see a big bump in CBAs with no Ash. He dropped, so he played almost permanent forward, 35% set of bounces. When he was in there, he looked slow. He got caught holding the ball 3.5 times, which I don't think he would have ever done in his career. And they're killers, because in Supercoach, that would have been clearances and worth extra points. Instead, they were turnovers and free kicks against. So I still have hope he's going to be that 80 player, which we can sort of swing as cover, hope for this week on the bye. I doubt anyone can even trade him out, though, this week, if you got him in last week for the extra number and his price point, and hopefully for the rest of the year. But it's just a hand up to say apologies if you jumped on for being how bullish I was, but I think he'll repay the faith. A few others who obviously didn't look great were Luke Ryan. We made mention of it last pod. Came into the bye rounds where he was a top six averaging defender, but leading into it, his scoring was down because he's playing more of a defensive role and he got the matchup on Toby Green. So it looks like that's what Dockers want to do with him, use him as more of a defensive lockdown, or not lockdown, but have an actual matchup and not just drop off and score like he does. And Hayden Young, who I thought would take the benefit of Ryan playing that role, only took 10% of the kick in. So still a bit of way to go for Hayden Young before he gets a confidence and starts to take that next step to be the main man back there for Frio. But the biggest question for the week I mentioned off the top is that working out who to trade out to get these players in. And luckily we had a few rookies pop their hand up in the last, probably 3 weeks ago when they did, an Eddie Ford and a George Wardlaw, where those coaches who jumped on him, have the ability to jump off now and have enough cash to make an upgrade. But if you have only one of them or none of them, you then have to look at potentially some of your premiums and someone who you would have thought at one point was going to be a keeper for the rest of the year and use them as an avenue for a trade to get the extra number this week and then also hope to get closer to a best 22 player, because these guys are looking just short of it. So firstly, Jack Zeeble. I know a lot of coaches jumped off in the last couple of weeks, and then he looked every bit of his age the week just gone. And with Aaron Hall out, gave a little bit of hope, but it was Sheasel the one who took over those kick-ins. So I have doubts that we'll see Zeeble, what he put up the first half of the year, in the second half. And if I was still an owner, I know he's dropped a lot of cash, but I'd be okay trading out of him now, even though we said a couple of weeks ago it's now or never. Tommy, your thoughts if you're still a Zeeble owner?
Yeah, look, it's not now or never. You can always move someone on, especially if the cash is right, I think, for Zeebs. I was a bit cut. Like, I traded him out the week before. He went 107. Then I seen Hall out. I'm like, this is shocking. But he obviously didn't play well on the weekend, even though his role was good in terms of his scoring. I think we've seen in the back end of 2020, he definitely slowed down quite a lot as well. So obviously age is a factor. I think he's probably the best trade-out option, especially in the defense in terms of players that are on their bye, because most people have a pretty full defense this week, and I think he can definitely go.
So it's him or Zeeble who were very similar price. A lot of coaches were trading out Zeeble first, mainly because he had the extra cash on his head. You could do something with that cash. Now they're head-to-head. Just after watching that last game, I think the concern with Sheasel was that he was moving into the midfield, playing half forward. They're trying to grow his game a little bit outside of that half-back role, which we know he can score really well at. Aaron Hall out, and he went back to defence. Zero centre bounces, I think he had on the weekend. Zero centre bounces, so played permanent defender. Kick-ins were high, 43% of those. So it's hard because he's the one a lot of coaches did earmark to trade this week, knowing that we're a bit short on numbers. He's done his role. He's made 260K and looks a little bit off the top six defenders. But if he's going to keep playing that role, I know he only scored a 104, but played better than that. Got a lot of the footy and did some good things. You're still a Sheasel owner, I believe. Tommy, is he in any of your trade plans to trade out, or is he now a full season keeper for you?
I think he's a full season keeper. He's 12th on average on the season, but really he's only, 5 points behind the top six. So per game, that's fine to hold. I think if you could trade him out and you could move him to a Dawson or a Stewart or a Dacos if you didn't have them, and that's a luxury move that you can do, definitely, for sure. He can be moved on and you can extract 10 points per game by doing, one of those top four players. But I think if you're moving him on to a Daniel or a Sinclair or a Houston or a Lloyd, that's just you're going kind of sideways. So depends on who you're moving him to. I think he's fine to hold at D6 for sure. And I think that's what I'll be doing. But if you were missing any of those absolute top liners and it works for your teams and your buys, I think he can be moved on.
Yeah, I actually always put Sinclair in those top liners now. As I mentioned, I'm liking what I've seen from him, and I wish I had the cash to get him to a Sinclair. That was the initial trade plan, but now it looks like with my lack of trades, I'll be holding him for the year. And as I said, after watching him against the Bulldogs in that role and his confidence, we just saw what Dacos did back half of last year too in the second half post-bye. He got a bit more confidence, as young kids do. Some hit the rookie wall and tire, but those sorts of players, those running halfback flankers, will get more confidence. He's got a rising star to chase after. I think he's going to probably do what he did in the first half, which, as you said, is close enough to that D6. And if it can save your trade and a bit of cash and potentially a luxury upgrade, say if a Sicily comes back later in the year and you do have those trades in cash, then maybe that. But I wouldn't be moving him on to anyone outside of those top four defenders, whereas I would be moving on a Sheasel. Bulldogs have a couple of strugglers. Baz Smith's just not getting it done, but I doubt many have him because he's never really been an attractive super coach. It's Jack McRae, who I still think will be a top six forward. It's just the fact he is playing as a forward. I mentioned those other names at the top six who are all playing 80% midfield minutes. He's playing 0% in the midfield and playing as a half forward. Just that Jack McRae is such a good super coach and accumulate. He's still going to score well enough. You just going to have to cop a bit of a bump in the road every now and then, which is something you never thought we'd say about a Jack McRae. Like, there's no guarantees that a Butters, Rosie, Cogs is going to outscore him, Cameron, from now to the rest of the year, despite them looking a little bit more attractive. So I'd still hold a McRae if I were an owner. GWS, bit like the Sheasel, I had planned to trade Cogs this week on his bye. He didn't get it done with Josh Kelly out of the team. So I thought, well, when Kelly comes back, who knows what he's going to do. He actually got a big bump in CBAs and played one of his better games for a while, Cog. So it's funny what 1 week can do to us. But I'm now looking to hold a Canelio. You're an owner too, aren't you, Tommy?
Yeah, I am. And yeah, I don't see the need in getting rid of him, to be honest, unless you're stacked in that forward line. If you're in a situation where you've got seven and you really do value that cover that you can get from bringing Cameron in, or you've got a forward sitting in your midfield. I really don't see what you gain from trading him out. He's averaging 99 on the season, 98 in the last three, 98 in the last five. Like, that's kind of what we paid for. And on average, he's sitting just outside the top eight. So, you know, a couple points a game. I think you'd really only consider moving him on for someone that's going to average, you know, 10 points per game more. And, you know, that's a Butters and a McRae. They're both on their bye. So I definitely wouldn't be looking to trade him out this week.
Yeah, and if you got told at the start of the year that that Stephen Cornelio was going to attend 80% of the centre bounces, which he's done so far this year, you'd be like, okay, we know he can score in that role. He's been down at times because the way he's been kicking it and his kicking efficiency, but we've also seen him have games of 140+. So I think, as you mentioned, we'll probably get what we're paying for, and that's close enough for the top six to not warrant trading out. The other one's popular pick, Tom Green, who, if you don't think he's a top eight and you have the ability to get up to a Oliver, you get the extra player this week plus someone who's going to score more the rest of the year, then go for it. I'm still a bit of a believer in Tom Green. I've actually got him as a top eight mid from now to the rest of the year. I think we'll start seeing him get better and better. He showed great signs on the weekend. Briggsy, so you've mentioned your plan. You're extracting the cash from Briggs to get a Clayton Oliver. If you're a Briggs owner and he's your R3, do you advise that's too much cash to have, you move him on and this is the week to do it, or is there merit to holding him all year as a bit of a cover?
I think there's merit to holding him all year, but I think for me, I would rather get Fife and use that cash to do the upgrades elsewhere. Cameron, and do upgrades elsewhere. I think for me, Briggsy, I really see the temptation as well for holding him for a few more games because he's probably got another 60 or 70K to make over the next 2 weeks. So the 2 weeks that he plays, I certainly see holding through that period and letting things, I guess, wash out with the other rucks as well. So he's definitely not a must trade. For me, I'd rather use his cash now and I don't need it down the track. So I think it's a very team dependent one. I wouldn't advocate for trading other rucks and going through the rest of the season with the Briggs, which I think is probably the only consideration. And then I guess if you're going to be moving him on, can you do your final upgrades with not taking that extra 60 or 70 grand that you're going to get over the next 2 weeks, which I think is fine to hold for. And it was going to be my plan before he made a hell of a lot on the weekend, was to hold him for an extra week or two. Or do you move him on now? So if you're going to complete your team and go to the players that you're very happy with, I think he's very much fine to move on now. We brought him in to make cash, especially if he was sitting at R3, and he's done that and done that in spades.
What about those coaches who don't have English, had a Darcy Cameron, a Sean Darcy instead, went the Briggs? Obviously their intention is to get up to English at one point because I think he's going to outscore Briggs for the second half of the year. Both have their bye this week, so obviously you can't trade to English this week. If you don't have Cameron, could you do a play like get Briggs to Cameron, get the extra player this week, and then eventually get English elsewhere? Do you wait till that gap gets more narrow, knowing that Briggs has more cash to make? What would you do if you had Briggs R2 and no English?
If I had Briggs R2, no English, I reckon I would hold him as long as I could field 18. You know, if he goes 116, 119, 116, he's going to 40K, 32K, 18K. There's a hell of a lot of cash to get out of him. If you've got two upgrades to do, you might be able to even save yourself a trade to do those two upgrades where you might have been looking at a two down, one up, one down, one up. Using the cash from Briggs could get you a one down, one up. So I think I'd definitely be holding there. And I do think turning him into English in the long term is probably going to result in more points on the back end. But I would definitely, if he was on field, I'd advocate for holding to get that extra cash out because, yeah, he could well and truly make 100K in 3 weeks if he put up a really big score.
Yeah, he hasn't shown any indication otherwise. So I'm with you as well. I'd do the same, narrow that gap and then look to do that move otherwise. So you've kind of hinted on your current trade plans. We're recording this on Tuesday night, so still plenty to happen. What are you currently thinking?
Yeah, so unless there's a drastic incident with Oliver, or we're told that Steele's 100% right to go, I'll be moving on Phillips, Briggs, and Steele, and bringing in Marek, Cameron, and Oliver. I think at that stage that'll leave one upgrade to do, which I'll do the following week, which will be a Weddle down and a Ford up, and I should have around 630k to get just about anyone, probably a Butters, I think.
Nice. How many trades left would that then leave you with for injury trades?
Yeah, so that'll be three trades left, which I'm not sure is enough, but I'm probably willing to take the risk. And I guess because I got 5-1, that's that extra cover on the swing. So realistically, if I didn't do the Steele to Oliver trade, I would have 4. And I figured that's a bit of a much of a muchness, and the way that Steele's playing and Oliver might score, I'd probably have to have 2 or 3 rounds of donuts to actually feel that difference. And if I get lucky, well, I get lucky.
No, I'm with you. And I think most coaches will be about that. I put up the stats in the insights last week that most coaches still have, or as of last week, 3 premium short, and they might have been running with 9 trades. So each of them do 1 down, 1 up, they're going to be left with 3 or 4 post-injury trades. We always talk about that magic number being 5. That's the luxury, and I know some coaches will have that benefit of doing that, and you can see the benefit last year that ABS Magic, old Abs, he was leading up until the last 3 weeks when he had George Hewitt out and wore 3 donuts, still came 4th. So it shows the value of having those extra trades late, and you'll be rewarded. But I think realistically most coaches will be running with a 3 or a 4. I've got 7 left before this week, where I'll be trading a Eddie Ford and a George Wardlaw to a Marek and a Darcy Cameron, which will leave me with just 18 playing, which, as I said, it's going to include Marek included in that, and Matt Johnson, who I think he said they're right for injury-wise, but obviously not as much confidence as we had last week rolling in. And one more upgrade to make to my team with 5 left. So next week I'll have to do 1 down, 1 up, and hopefully land someone of note to leave me with 3 left. But again, as I said, I've got no Sinclair and I've got Jack Steele. So if I want to do a little fix of any of those ones, we're looking sub 3, which obviously isn't pretty. Somehow I've ended up with 7 defenders, so at least I'll be able to do some looping there, and I'm less concerned with the lack of trades knowing I've got that cover of Cameron in the ruck, 5 swinging mid and forward, and a Shees or Will Day at D7. So plenty to play out, 10 weeks to go. We'll see a lot of change from teams knowing how much cash they've got left and trades up the bank. So hope you finish the bye rounds strong this week and you get a real feel about where your team sits come round 16 and see who's just been sideways trading through the byes and getting themselves through there and which teams have done their best to improve their team for the second half. But thanks for your help again, Tommy. You certainly imparted some wisdom on me. I would love to be doing what you did and get Steele up to Cameron, but I'm giving Jack Steele 1 more week. Cheers, Tommy. Just before you go, Tommy, so I've dealing with 18 post-trades this week. I've got 1 more trade up my sleeve. I'm only doing the 2 to get Cameron and Marek, and I'm not too, like, Marek, what did he score? 49 on debut, but there's every chance he could score a 20. Is it worth me trading, using an extra trade? If I could do a Sheasel to a Sinclair or a top echelon, I think we mentioned before, I would have done that. I can't get up to them. I could do a Rosie to a Sinclair and get an extra number, or is that blowing up my side just to get that 1 extra number, knowing that most teams will be struggling to get 18 this week?
Yeah, I don't think it's worth blowing up your side for. I think I'm going to have 18 as well, and I'm bringing Marich, who's going to be that 18th player. You know, I'm expecting a 30 from him, and I certainly wouldn't be making any trades that I'm uncomfortable with to make sure I got that 18. I'd be happy to almost go in with 17 and a donut rather than blowing up my side or making something that was going to jeopardise my team long term. So, you know, if you've got 17, I think we've seen on the weekend, I had 19 and my last 3 players on field were below 50. You know, 50 points can be made up pretty quickly if you've got the correct primo after a week and you took a donut this week. So if that means not doing an upgrade and waiting until next week to get a Butters or, you know, a McRae or someone that's coming off their bye, I think that's probably worth doing, and personally something I would look at doing if I was only carrying 17 through.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's an easy look short term in terms of getting an extra number, knowing that, it's most teams, we've done a lot of planning for Supercoach and for the buyers, and we're both left with 18, including Marich. I dare say there'll be a lot of coaches out there who even have 16, 17. So don't stress if you do have 16 or 17 or the bare minimum 18. And if you do have 19 or 20, this hopefully will be your time to really climb up the ranks. Finally, captain, vice captain. We've got a few players in form recently. Dunkley leading the charge there. So I think I'll be just looking at the schedule, if it works, a Dunkley into a Rory Laird. Yourself, Tom?
Yeah, probably similar. I think I might even jump on Oliver, who I think plays on the Thursday. So I might have a look at him as a VC. Why not? I'm not sure about Dunkley. I think Windhager, who I think plays Brisbane, might go to him. Or is it?
Yeah, no, that's a Friday night. Yeah, that's Windhager.
Yeah. So I think that might go to Dunkley. It also might go to Neil. Who knows? So I'm not sure who I'll go with my C. It's actually a pretty tough week for that. So probably a Laird, probably an Oliver into Laird, I think, at the stage.
Love it. Cheers, Tommy. Bye.